Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. The replacement of I-81 is a centrally pressing issue for the city of Syracuse and the region, rubbing on past wounds and opening up new possibilities as well as logistical challenges. A decision grows closer, and recently Governor Cuomo reopened the possibility of a tunnel or a depressed highway option, in addition to rebuilding the elevated highway or tearing it down entirely, in favor of a boulevard and rerouting through traffic onto 481. Housing and development officials in the city of Syracuse are now thinking of the project as a vehicle for a major restructuring of the housing and real estate in the area surrounding the highway, which they hope could fundamentally transform it and the relations between different parts of the city, leading to a significant regeneration. Two of the leaders in this initiative join me today. Andrew Maxwell is the Director of Policy and Innovation in the Mayor's Office. Bill Simmons is the Director of the Syracuse Housing Authority. Andrew, Bill, welcome to the program.
Oh, welcome.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Well, Bill, let me start with just the basic vision, and then we'll dissect how we get there logistically. But first, what's the big picture change in the neighborhood around I-81 that you folks are envisioning?
Well, it was 3 or 4 years ago that myself, City Council President Van Robinson, and Andrew Maxwell went to San Francisco to look at how the community really developed once the earthquake took place and the interstate highway there came down. What was the impact? And it was very encouraging in terms of making the area very vibrant. A community and neighborhood. But one of the things that I walked away with from that visit was how would I be able to take advantage of this opportunity here in Syracuse to transform the area and get a better neighborhood and better housing for the residents who we serve. And so as a result of that, we did some research and we found out that in 1993, President Clinton had put together, signed an executive order that required mitigation and enhancements to communities where you have major disruption like this for communities of low income and predominantly of color. So that was the impetus to say, okay, how do we leverage this to revitalize an area? Now, you have to realize that our development plan was part of our strategic plan to look at public housing and other external forces that were weighing in. Primarily that HUD has pretty much divested itself of public housing infrastructure. And so we were looking at the long-term viability of public housing and along with using that asset, the land that we owned in such a highly desirable area to transform the area.
So, Andrew, flesh this out a little bit further in terms of what would be the vision of the kind of new neighborhood that we would see? And as a specific corollary to that, why mixed income housing is so important in making it work? Because one of the things I've gotten from reading things from the city and some past interviews with you, Bill, is the necessity of this. Is there any evidence to suggest that above and beyond simply having more income in a given area, that there are benefits for the area of having middle and even upper incomes in the same area, along with lower incomes at the same time?
Looking at communities across the country, successful cities, they've fostered those sorts of environments, communities of mixed income, mixed use. This is an opportunity for people of different backgrounds, different incomes to be living together, working together. Those are the things that makes a city successful, that encourages the sort of revitalization that we've seen in some parts of Syracuse and in other communities that have done this well. And I think what you hear from Bill and from other leaders across the community relative to this project is that this is not just an opportunity to do something new with transportation. This is an opportunity to do something much bigger, much more important for the city and for the region. And I think the partnerships that exist, folks like Bill, folks in the leadership in terms of local government as well as in business, I think are ready for that sort of partnership and exploring these new ideas to revitalize the community.
And I don't know who between the two of you wants to jump in on this first, but so give me an idea, if you can, of what this new vision might look like. I mean, I'm sure that there will be different possibilities, but give me an idea of what we're thinking about here.
So we hired some consultants out of Washington, D.C. to engage with the neighbors over an 18-month period of time to look at what we call the redevelopment district. It's a district because it covers from King Street all the way over to East Adams and from Salina all the way to Almond Street. It's a 27 block area that most of the properties, 55% of the properties, the Syracuse Housing Authority owns, and there are other public institutions in that district like the King School, the Health Center, EOC, a number of public institutions that could benefit greatly from the redevelopment of the neighborhood. And so what we're and looking at and talking with the developers and the residents, they wanted to have a community that would deconcentrate the poverty, have a mixed income, and create economic opportunity for the residents there as well. They wanted to have a supermarket there, financial institutions, daycare, the kinds of services that's going to help people be more successful and self-sufficient. And so when you look at this type of a neighborhood, you're looking at maybe – we don't have the exact numbers yet, but maybe you're looking at 20% market rate, another 20% workforce, and another 20% low income, some general type of mix where, as Andrew was pointing out, you have the benefit of the modeling and of the different kinds of neighborhoods and the productivity there. So we think that, again, being with its location close to the Syracuse University and downtown, there'll be a lot of millennials. And I had, in some cases, I keep talking about millennials wanting to live in this neighborhood, but I got a lot of retirees that said they would like to live in this type of neighborhood as well. We think it would be productive and transformative for everyone involved.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Bill Simmons, director of the Syracuse Housing Authority, and Andrew Maxwell, the city's director of policy and innovation. So, Andrew, give me a little bit more specific idea, if you can, of the development strategy that's involved here. I mean, how do the big pieces of public fund? There's obviously going to be a lot of public funding. The idea here, you're going to tap on that in different ways, and then private investments, and then the moments of opportunity surrounding the reconstruction, whatever form it takes. How do these things all fit together in a strategy?
This is a really important moment in the city's future. Looking at this project, looking at some of the other projects that are forging ahead in the city, we're rezoning the entire city. The things that we're looking at for the future, this is an important moment. For us to work together and looking at this project, the Route 81 project, as an opportunity to do new things and to encourage the sort of investment that we've already been seeing in downtown Syracuse and in the University Hill area, this is an opportunity to knit together successful parts of the community and to create new opportunities for connections between neighborhoods that for these last several decades have been divided. And so as we look at the future, thinking about this opportunity as something that's more than just about transportation, and we look at some of the city's efforts in rezoning the city, it's about encouraging the sort of investment that we've been seeing. It's about encouraging a more vital environment, walkable, bikeable communities, mixed use and mixed income communities. These are the efforts that we're pushing ahead with our partners. So working with Bill, working with the local institutions, the business environment, and folks in local government, I think that's the general vision. That's what we're working toward together. So our planning efforts as a city at large, the work that Bill and his team have been doing with the Housing Authority fits very well within that context.
So I was going to ask you about this later, but you brought it up. I'll ask now. Do you see some of the things positively that have already happened downtown, Armory Square, you mentioned, some other apartment and condo projects as somehow providing the critical mass to expand into this area? What's the relationship there?
Well, I think it's clear that there's an interest in downtown living. That's something we see not just in Syracuse, but in cities all across the country. That means we have an opportunity to see that sort of reinvestment in our city that we need to be a more successful and more equal city as a whole. So that sort of desire for downtown living, we have people, whether it's millennials or others, they want to live in a downtown environment. They appreciate cities. They want to be around that sort of authentic urban environment that has historic character. They want to live and work in places with people that look differently than they do. That's what we're experiencing in Syracuse, especially in our urban core neighborhoods like downtown and the University Hill. We need to knit those together and create new opportunities for both public and private investments that facilitate that kind of redevelopment.
So on the ground, Bill, as this goes forward, will the buildings that are currently in place, I mean, when you see the photographs from up above, you really get a good sense of this. Will those buildings be raised and something else rebuilt in their place? Will they be renovated? Will it be a combination of both? I know you want to see some private investment and private construction in here. Give me a sense of on the ground how this is going to go forward.
For the most part, there will be some developments that will be rehabbed and redeveloped. Like, for instance, Toomey Abbott Towers. We have 306 units of seniors and disabled residents there. They're not going to be required to relocate during this I-81 opportunity. So we're going to probably put in, well, we're definitely going to be looking to put in some central air conditioning and new windows and just revitalize that building for those residents as well. But for the vast majority of the properties that we have there, we're looking to raise those and put in a street grid that brings back new urbanism and brings back the street grid to make them more walkable neighborhoods and get rid of the super blocks. And because you have to realize that Pioneer Homes is one of the first public housing authorities in New York, is the first public housing authority in New York State and one of the first in the country. So it's almost 77, 78 years old and really not ideal for, the kind of family living that we're looking for today. So we're looking to with the street grid option that possibly will result with I-81, now you're talking about neighborhoods that connect, drive through, and rebuilding neighborhoods between the Syracuse Housing Authority, the city of Syracuse, and downtown. But for the most part, over a probably 10-year period of time, you're looking at $200 million of public-private investment where the vast majority of the homes will be raised and you'll get a typical street that encourages walking neighborhoods and bicycling and not the super blocks that you have today.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Andrew Maxwell, the Director of Policy and Innovation in the Syracuse Mayor's Office, and Bill Simmons, the Director of the Syracuse Housing Authority. We've been discussing the I-81 project and a larger set of ideas about housing and real estate that may come out of that. Bill, there's a big challenge, obviously, in what it is that we're talking about when it comes to community buy-in for this. And I think there's going to be a lot of suspicion, particularly among some poorer residents, that if this succeeds in any way, it's going to be by shifting them out. And that there's going to be this transition period where a lot of folks will have to move out before they can move back in. You talked about raising buildings before. I want to even further complicate that by saying, there's a history here, I think, for poor residents where their interactions with government and the things that government has told them have not always been very positive. And so now, you enter into this dialogue. How are you going to approach that? How is the city going to approach that and deal with that?
Well, we started 3 years ago, as I talked about when we started with the master plan and engaging the consultants to work with the residents and explaining to them what type of housing and neighborhood would they like to see. So much of the plan that you see coming forward has been a result of the neighbor input, and they want to see something different and new in that residence. And so that was a large part of the buy-in. The other part is that when you're dealing with we have also started dealing with residents in terms of over the past 3 or 4 months and doing an individual survey with the residents to find out, create a housing opportunity for them. Who would want to stay in a neighborhood? Who would like a housing choice voucher? And so that gives them an opportunity of choice, which is really what you want to do for anybody. It's all about having some choice. And so there are some residents who look at public housing as a safety net, but there's also some residents that look at public housing as a spider web, and they feel trapped, and they would like to have a voucher, a housing choice voucher, which would allow them to relocate, to move anywhere in the country, whether it's on the south side of Syracuse, east side of Syracuse, or to go to Atlanta, Georgia, or Charlotte, where they may have family. So they look at that as an opportunity. There's going to be, because we're going to do the redevelopment in phases, there will be an opportunity for some folks to stay in the same neighborhood while we redevelop an area and then move back into that newly redeveloped area.
And hopefully, I'd imagine, see the benefits that are coming from what's happened so far and then want to be part of that, right?
Exactly right. So unlike redevelopment that was done in the 50s and in some case most recently in Chicago and Atlanta, we're not going to be wholesale raising all the properties and moving out 1,300 households. No, we're going to do the redevelopment in phases. And so as you redevelop one area, a lot of residents will be able to move back in, and then you do it over a period of time. And that's the best way for most people to take advantage of the redeveloped area as it's completed. Now, when you're dealing with low-income residents, they're always going to be suspicious about government mm-hmm. and not believing what they hear until it actually happens. I mean, you and I, we're all, even those of us who are middle class and highly educated, we're suspicious of government sometimes of whether they're going to do what they say they're going to do. But, you know, that's the process. But we did make that choice to start early with the residents, kind of inform them as to have an input as to the plan and what type of neighborhood they want to see. Also, during this time of transition, give them the greatest opportunity for have the most choice in terms of where they may be living. And we think that's the fairest and best way to do it. But a lot of residents won't believe until they see it, and you just got to have to work through those issues.
Yeah, Andrew, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. What we're basically talking about is the trust issue here, and then also another particular aspect of it that I wanted to bring into it, a concern perhaps that this would further marginalize parts of the South Side and the near West Side in terms of where the maximum benefit would be and that kind of thing. Would you want to add anything to that?
Well, the one thing that I would reinforce that Bill was saying was about engagement. And I think Bill and his team, they've been speaking to their residents for years now about this project and the potential impacts both in the neighborhood and on the city as a whole. I think that's very important. The state DOT, they've been making great efforts in recent years to talk about this project at a community level. At the city, we've worked with them to make sure that that happens. That's something that sets the project apart from what happened 50 or 60 years ago in this community,
right,
where this was built through the center of our city without the input of local residents. And we have those scars still where folks in the community remember that, and they're fearful that the same thing may happen today. I think it's a credit to Bill and his team, as well as folks with the state DOT, that they've been making the efforts to ensure that people are heard, that people are a part of the process. I think that's critical if we're talking about how we might remake our city with this opportunity, and it's something that's going to have impacts for decades into the future.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guests are Bill Simmons and Andrew Maxwell. Andrew, come back to you with us, the politics. So the current mayor is obviously supportive of this vision, and both of you, you know, have worked closely with her, but she only has one more year in office. So is there a need to get something really started on this plan now before a successor comes into office to put kind of a ratchet in this plan, if you will, if we want to think about it as a gear?
Well, I think it's important that first and foremost, the community is engaged. And I think that's what this mayor has been saying from the beginning. And I think that's what we should all be saying as leaders in the community, is that the state and federal agencies involved with this process have to have an open process. They need to make sure that residents are able to own this and be driving the future vision. So the politics, of course, are challenging. You know, we're all very aware of the sensitivities around it, both in the city and in sort of the city-suburb dynamic. We're all keenly aware of that. But frankly, I think there are more things that we have in common relative to the vision that we have for our city. I think people in both the city and suburbs and of all political stripes can appreciate the sort of revitalization that's been happening in the city. I don't think there's anything that Bill or myself or anyone in the community is proposing that is counter to that sort of revitalization. So I think so long as this process continues to move forward, that it's open and transparent, there are opportunities for people, particularly in these neighborhoods, to be involved, I think that we'll be in a position to have the sort of leadership that we need in the city moving forward.
And Bill, the governor has reopened the consideration of the tunnel or the depressed highway options. These are more costly possibilities that have the support of many local officials. Does that change the thinking about how this housing and real estate restructuring might work? Does that throw a monkey wrench into it? Does it make it easier to think about? I mean, how does it change it?
Well, the information that we have from the existing scoping report suggests that you can do the tunnel option as well as the community grid. So our plan is most complementary to the community grid option. And so if, in fact, as a result of this process, the tunnel option is chosen, you'll still have the community grid as well. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be consistent with the plan that we're putting forward. This does stretch out the time frame significantly, again, according to the scoping report, to maybe a 10-year construction, but who knows, it could be longer. And from that standpoint,
I mean, if you build the tunnel.
If you build the tunnel.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, yes, that's going to be more burdensome to the community to live through this reconstruction a lot longer. So, and ultimately, the tunnel option along with the community grid would be consistent with our plan, but you're probably talking about a much longer term disruption to the community. And I think we all need to be concerned about that.
And just quickly on this point before I get to my final question, my understanding, though, in reading some of what I've read about the ideas that you're proposing is that even though the elevated highway might not be the best suited, it doesn't make what you're trying to do impossible. I mean, you still can think about utilizing the different kinds of funds and investments to try to change that neighborhood still in a fund. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely correct. Again, we're looking at when we talk about mitigations and enhancements, it's an opportunity for the Housing Authority to negotiate with the state to leverage, put some dollars into the neighborhood and take those dollars and leverage them with other opportunities that we see coming forward or that currently exist. As you know, the Central New York region was very successful in getting $500 million available for urban renewal and planning in this neighborhood. And part of that was redeveloping the urban core. So we see an opportunity there to leverage some dollars for this plan. The governor has a housing MOU in front of the state legislator for $2 billion to spend over the next 7 years. Again, an opportunity for dollars to come in, along with the private investment. And when I say private investment, you talk about things as simple as the Housing Authority setting aside a certain portion of its property for a grocery store to bid on a property and build in a neighborhood.
And Andrew, just a few seconds left. Big question, but I still want to put it to you. You know, it's impossible perhaps to say, but if you could give me an analogy or a comparison to describe just how important these decisions and this kind of project is to the future of the city and the region. I mean, it's been called transformational, but really, just how important is this?
Sure. Well, I mean, we can use words like transformational and opportunities, but I think the reality is we have the benefit of history to understand what a decision like this can mean for a community. We have the last 50, 60 years of experience to point to and understanding what the decision that was made then has meant for us today. That reinforces those messages about we have to be involved now. We have to make sure that everyone in the community has an opportunity to speak their mind on this and make sure that we are being articulate about the sort of future that we want for our city. So I'm asked about some of the vision that we've talked about here and the sort of revitalization we're interested in having healthy, vibrant, mixed-use, mixed-income communities in our city. And people say, well, is that really possible if they rebuild a highway or build a tunnel? Is that really possible? And how are you responding to it? Frankly, I think the planning process relative to 81 needs to be responsive to us, not the other way around. We've been trying to express that vision in the way that we zone the city, in the way that we plan for the city, in the way that we work together across the community with our partners. I think if we do that, we'll be sure to make this opportunity something that does count for the future. And making sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, that we put our position to have the sort of revitalization that Bill and others have been talking about, that's our chance to do something that's special for the city. And what's good for the city is good for the county and good for the region.
That was Andrew Maxwell and Bill Simmons. Bill, Andrew, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you,
Grant.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.